It's a lot of women that's coming out, you know, and expressing themselves about what happened to them.
I really hope the Me Too movement is propelling us in that direction where assaulting people has consequences.
I think it's important that we listen to all of the women that are coming out and telling their stories and work on how we can engage them in a healing process.
The Me Too movement has led many people to share their experiences with sexual harassment and sexual assault. It has sparked conversations and controversy and maybe even change. I'm Charity Nebbe. Look for Unsettled, Mapping Me Too, a new podcast from Iowa Public Radio in the iTunes Store and on Google Play, or find it at iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In 1949, Evelyn Berkby was living on a farm in southwest Iowa, outside of Sydney, when she began writing a weekly newspaper column called Up a Country Lane in the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel. She still writes that column and has been for 69 years. She also became a radio homemaker on KMA Radio, part of the Kitchen Clatter program. And at the age of 99, she still goes on the air live on KMA once a month. She's also just published her 12th book. It's called Through a Country Town Cookbook. It's full of her memories of graduating from high school in Sydney, Iowa in 1936, and then returning there about a decade later to marry Robert Berkby, a Boy Scouts of America executive who was responsible for the four southwesternmost counties in the state of Iowa. They lived together in Sydney until his death 2 years ago. The book is also full of the history of this little town, the county seat of Fremont County, and it contains enough recipes to power a dozen church basement potlucks. Evelyn doesn't get out much anymore. She can no longer see, but she continues to live in her home with the help of a team of round-the-clock caregivers and the support of her three sons who live far away but still keep a close watch on their mother. I drove to Sydney, Iowa, to pay Evelyn a visit at the home she and Robert built together over 50 years ago.
Oh, it's wonderful to see you.
Oh, honey, it's so good to see you.
And when we sat down to chat, I asked Evelyn about moving to Sydney in 1935 as a high school senior. I asked if it was hard to leave her friends in Waukee and start over in a new town as a senior in high school.
I had a wonderful father, and Methodist ministers at that time moved every 2 or 3 years. They just did. The Methodist Church had the idea that you moved the preachers often. If they were good with the youth, then maybe the next preacher would be good with the elderly. So they had the idea that you move a preacher often. Well, here I was getting ready to leave Waukee. And we'd only been there 2 years. And I had some very, very good friends. Anyway, I was going to tell you what my father said. Every time we moved, he said it's okay to be sad because it shows that you've had a good time here and you've made good friends. But just remember, you get to a new town and there's new people to meet and there's a new school to go to. And a new church, and somebody special. Well, what he didn't know was that Robert Berkby lived in Sydney. So when we moved here, I met Robert. He was in my class in school.
And he was Berkby, and you were Corey, so you sat next to each other, right?
Right.
But you were not high school sweetheart.
No. His girlfriend was a Presbyterian, and she went to her youth group on Sunday night, and I went to mine across the street. Well, Robert lived on North Street, which is where the parsonage was, so I lived on North Street. So on Sunday night, Robert would walk home with me. And I liked that because I liked him, but he never dated me.
Well, and after high school, you moved away and you became a career woman, right?
I guess I did. I finished my degree at the University of Chicago, and I worked in the First Methodist Church downtown in Chicago.
You ended up seeing Robert again when you came back to Sydney for a high school reunion, right?
No. I came out for my roommate's wedding.
Oh.
And they asked me to sing at their wedding. And I couldn't turn that down. She got married in the Methodist Church that's beside Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. I visited my mother because she lived in Shenandoah, which was on the way.
So you saw Robert again when you were home for that wedding.
He was a Boy Scout executive. He had been in the Air Force and had gotten ill with rheumatic fever to the extent that he was dismissed from the Air Force and went home. And he had gotten an apartment in Shenandoah, where he lived just down the street from my mother. It was in the newspaper that I was home visiting my mother. They put it in the paper in those days. And he called me up. He said, "I hear you're at your mother's. I'd like to take you out for a date this evening." So there he was at my door at 7 o'clock.
It's a good thing he acted fast, wasn't it?
Yes, because he was there every day I was there. He was at that door. And the last day I was there, he took me down to the state park. Wabonsi is just south of Shenandoah. And he took me down there, had a chicken supper in the car. And we parked the car, carried the food, went down to the swinging bridge. Robert got us up to that little meadow, and he built a campfire so he could heat the chicken. I was impressed, really impressed. And a big moon came up.
How long was it before you guys got married after that?
Not very long, but I was smitten. There had been in Chicago, I had 6 Methodist preachers proposed to me.
6?
6.
Wow.
They all made the same mistake. They all said, "We have a church. We can go if we have a wife. They'll accept us if we have a wife."
Oh.
It was a business project. And I said no. Well, here was Robert. And the fact that my dad knew him and liked him played a big part in my quickness in accepting him.
One of the beautiful things I think about your marriage to Robert is that he encouraged you to work at a time when very few women worked outside of the home. In fact, he was the one that saw the advertisement in the newspaper that they were looking for a newspaper columnist and encouraged you to apply, right?
Yes. In fact, I said, "No, I don't write. I talk. I had done workshops and taught school and that sort of thing, so I had that kind of experience. Robert said, no, that's just like, you talk, you write it. You write it down. And he literally got out the typewriter and the paper and a chair and had me sit down and write a column. And then he put my hat on my head. It was November, so he put my coat on. And he pushed me out the door, even though I was 8 months pregnant, gently, and said, go and give that column to the newspaper man in Shenandoah. And Mr. Archie had a big booming voice, and when I went in, I thought, I know what God sounds like. Just like Mr. Archie, with his big booming voice. Mr. Archie said, are you a farm woman? I want a farm woman to write. I said, yes, we live on a little rental farm. I have one baby and I'm expecting another any time. Oh, he said, that's exactly what we want. And I'll run your articles as long as people are interested. And always put in a recipe, he said. I said, oh, yes, sir. I didn't tell him I didn't know how to cook. But you know, it was one of the best things that ever happened because I called my neighbors. In 5 months, the radio station in Shenandoah called me. They wanted me to come and be a radio homemaker. And Robert said, sure, you can do that too.
We'll find out more about Evelyn and Robert Berkby's 70-year-long love story, about Evelyn's career, and about the history of Sidney, Iowa in just a moment. Evelyn Berkby is a newspaper columnist. She's been writing the Up a Country Lane column for 69 years. First, it was published in the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel, now the Shenandoah Valley News. She was also a radio homemaker on KMA Radio, and she still goes on the air once a month on KMA to talk about life and what she's into. And she's just published her 12th book. It's called Through a Country Town Cookbook. I visited her in her home in Sidney, Iowa, and we'll hear more of our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
I was elected the majority leader.
This amendment broadens the scope of the bill.
What will this bill do to turn that around?
During the legislative session, Iowa Public Radio produces a weekly podcast.
We just want to make sure that it is something that is sustainable.
These are proven programs that work.
From committees to chambers, follow the path of bills and policies.
This bill lays out transparency in the process.
How can you say that with confidence?
The podcast, Under the Golden Dome, returns in January. Subscribe now for the 2019 legislative session.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm visiting with Evelyn Berkby. She's known as one of Iowa's most beloved homemakers. She was a homemaker of the air on KMA Radio's Kitchen Clatter program in the 1950s, and she was also an early career woman. She's been writing the Up a Country Lane column, first for the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel and now for the Shenandoah Valley News, since 1949. She is 99 years old and has just published her latest book. It's called Through a Country Town Cookbook. I traveled to Sidney to visit with her, and we spent the first part of our visit reminiscing about her courtship with Robert Berkby that led to a 70-year marriage and partnership. Robert encouraged her strongly to apply for the position of columnist and supported her in her radio career as well. I asked her, when she thinks about those 70 years with Robert,
that moment when he encouraged her to write that column and encouraged her to pursue her interests, her passions, an identity outside the home, does she think that was one of the keys to 70 years of happy marriage?
I think so. Because I had for 10 years, and I swore I grew up in those 10 years.
The 10 years of being away at school and working in Chicago?
Yes. It made me very independent.
So what else do you think made your marriage so successful? So many of us dream of having a 70-year-long happy marriage. So share some of your secrets.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, every night we'd say, I love you. Every morning we'd say, I love you. He'd say it to me and I'd say it to him. And we did. The other happy thing, he told me before we married, he said, you'll help me learn, and I want to learn. He said, the GI Bill will pay for my courses, and you'll help me learn. I know you will. That's one reason I'm marrying you. Well, that was okay with me. That was a little different than the preachers. So there you go. I helped him learn, and he certainly did help me learn, because once I started writing, I was learning all the time.
Was it hard for you to work outside the home? Did some people judge you for that?
I don't have any idea that anybody did. My mother was a preacher's wife. She had gotten her music degree in Northwestern, which was certainly different than most women of that day. Even going was unusual. I think she inspired me that it was okay to go. And all the time she was married to Dad, she had a job in effect because she had the choirs in the church. She had a children's choir and a youth choir and an adult choir. And she probably played whatever instrument was in the church.
Evelyn's love of learning is a thread that travels through every part of her life, even at the age of 99. When I arrived at her house, she was listening to a book on tape. She gets them through the lending library for the Iowa School for the Blind, and she goes through so many, it's hard for the library and her sons to keep up with demand. The book she was listening to when I got there was a biography of President Ronald Reagan, a book she had a keen interest in because her sister had a personal connection with Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, for a time, was a radio sports announcer and had his office in a building in Des Moines. My sister lived at that time in Waukee, Iowa, 10 miles outside, where Dad was a Methodist minister. Mm-hmm. He used to go in to Ruth's office, where she was a secretary, and sat at the desk in the reception room. And he would come in and sit on her desk and visit with her. So then she went back out to Waukee and told the folks where she lived that Ronald Reagan sat on her desk and visited with her. And so she kept that job for as long as Ronald Reagan lived and worked in Des Moines.
Was she excited then when he ran for president so much later?
Oh, of course she was. Very. And when he became president, of course, she was delighted.
But the book I came to talk about is Evelyn's latest, Through a Country Town Cookbook. It's about the history of Sidney, Iowa, her memories of life there, and it's full of recipes. Here's how it begins. Sidney is a relatively small rural community in southwest Iowa. You can't get more south or west in southwest Iowa, since Sidney is in the corner county, Fremont County, that borders on the south with the state of Missouri and on the west with the state of Nebraska. The Missouri River defines the western and part of the southern border of the county, winding its way from St. Louis up past Iowa on its way to its beginnings in western Montana. Fremont County has an illustrious history. In fact, its human history goes back to prehistoric days with the appearance of Earth Lodge dwellers. Later came mountain men and fur traders, map makers, and explorers from many countries, finally culminating in the early 1800s with the explorers Lewis and Clark. They not only passed by Fremont County on their westward trek, but in their journals they also talked about paddling up the two Nishnabotna rivers into the heart of Fremont County to see if those rivers held any further interest for their journey. I asked Evelyn what made her decide that at the age of 99, she was going to publish another book.
Well, I had another one in my head, and that was the one I wrote, the one about Sidney. It's the one that talks about what it was like. The year was, what, 1935?
Yeah.
When I was a senior in high school. In fact, I wrote it because it was so much like most small towns of that era.
Sidney is the county seat of Fremont County, and a beautiful red brick courthouse sits in the middle of the town square. Evelyn writes about the courthouse and the businesses that she remembers on the square, the Strand Movie Theater, the furniture store, which was also a funeral parlor, Hotel Sidney, and she writes about Penn Drug, which is still in operation. It's the oldest operating pharmacy in Iowa, and it also has a soda fountain, which is still a popular lunch spot for people in town. Evelyn also writes about some of the notable people who lived in Sidney, the longtime town doctors, Nellie Chapel, who taught a Bible class on Sundays at the Methodist Church and spent the rest of the week reading people's palms and astrology charts. And I was particularly taken with her chapter about Stella Cully. It starts out this way. "Don't you ever forget me." Stella Cully concluded every visit with those words. We would stand at the door and give her a hug and a kiss. And as we turned to wave goodbye, she would always repeat the statement, "Don't you ever forget me." Stella was a hard-working pioneer woman. She told stories about being born in a sod house on her father's homestead in Jewell County, Kansas, on December 29, 1877. Her younger sister, who was also born on the homestead, died of diphtheria. Stella talked about her experience with the terrible snowstorm of 1881, the time when many school children perished, which led it to be called the Children's Blizzard. Her parents would not allow her to walk to school alone. When she was 7 years old, the family moved to Red Cloud, Nebraska, so the young daughter could attend a good school. I asked Evelyn to tell me a little bit more about Stella Cully.
Mrs. Cully was raised over in Red Cloud, Nebraska. And who is the lady that she knew there?
Willa Cather.
Yes. Yes.
Willa Cather, the author of My Antonia and O Pioneers.
That's the first thing that she knew. Well, her family eventually moved to Missouri, which is a slave state. Mm-hmm. And there she saw a lynching. Oh. She said it was terrible. It was terrible. She remembered it.
And she always told you to never forget her, right?
Never to forget her. Every time I'd pick up the kids, and she always said she made cookies for them. She made them sugar cookies. And they thought they were the best cookies in the world. She had an old-fashioned kitchen, an old-fashioned house.
Do you ever think about how Mrs. Cully was your link to the past? But for so many people now, Evelyn, you're our link to the past. You're the one sharing these stories.
Well, I have a very sharp memory. And I thought, while I still have my memory, I've got to write them down.
So you're still learning and eager to learn more. I can imagine some people might think at the age of 99, you'd think you know it all.
The year I had my 90th birthday, I was still seeing, which I am not doing now. Mm-hmm. I was very gradually losing my vision due to hereditary glaucoma and macular degeneration, which took my vision completely now. Anyway, back when I was 90, I said to myself, if I'm going to live to be an old lady, which it looks like I am, and that I'm going to lose my vision, I'm not going to be negative. I'm not going to be grumpy. I'm going to be cheerful. I'm going to find out why God kept me here this long. There must be some reason you'd have people over 90. And I have these new people coming to take care of me now. So as I meet these new people, I'll see if there's perhaps a need that they have that I can contribute. So I think I found being positive has helped me to live longer. I'm still here and I'm 99 now. This coming July 31st, I will be 100 years old. So I treasure young friends. And I used to talk to high school kids a lot. Mm-hmm. And I always told them, three things help you live a long life. First of all, you don't smoke. No, not at all. Secondly, you drink frugally. What you're doing is keeping your mind clear. You don't get a second one. God gives you one good, clean mind. Keep it clean. And my last rule is stay positive. Stay happy. No complaining. So I tell people when they come to work for me, I don't allow grumpy people in my house.
In spite of the fact that Evelyn can't get around on her own, she still stays busy. She has a team of 8 different women who come in shifts to take care of her, keep her company, and take care of the home. She is very interested in the lives of these women. And she had dozens of questions for me about my life. She is also still, with a little bit of assistance, writing her weekly column for the Shenandoah Valley News. And once a month, she does an interview on the air on KMA Radio.
I go on live.
Nice.
It is as long as I can talk young. I don't want to talk old. When a person gets old, their voice sounds old, don't you think?
Our voices definitely change. So you don't want to sound old?
I don't want to sound old. And that's another reason I have Bob help me with my column, because I don't want to write old. And I have him keep me writing younger.
Evelyn, you are 99 now. And next summer, you'll turn 100. What do you have planned for your 100th birthday?
Oh, my. Oh, my. I remember when my husband's mother had her 100th birthday in the old age home here in Sydney. We got a big angel food cake, and then we put 100 of those little tapers on it, and we could get 100 on that angel food cake.
I'll bet that was quite a blaze.
When we lit those candles, that flame went all together.
Oh, no.
And I thought we were going to burn the nursing home down. It went whoosh. Well, we didn't, thank goodness. But we quickly got the flame blown out.
So are you hoping for the same kind of fireworks on your 100th?
I just think that we're going to put 100 number and tell our people, you don't put 100 candles on a birthday cake.
Evelyn Birkby. She will turn 100 next July. I traveled to Sydney in the far southwest corner of the state to visit with her and talk about her new book, Through a Country Town Cookbook. It's available through the Fremont County Historical Society. And in a moment, we'll learn more about the history of Fremont County thanks to a project Evelyn started years ago called A View from the Attic. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Evelyn Birkby has not only been writing in and about Fremont County for nearly 70 years, she has also inspired many others to share their knowledge and to put their memories down on paper. She was one of the founding members of the Fremont County Historical Society in the 60s, and beginning in the late 1980s, she started publishing weekly columns called View from the Attic that were published in all of the county's newspapers. Those columns focused on the history of Fremont County, and the column was put on hold in the 90s, but in 2005, it was revived. This time, it was a team effort. Many people started contributing their memories to the column, and over 500 of those columns have now been published in a new book from the Fremont County Historical Society called Selections from View from the Attic. Lona Lewis was one of Evelyn's partners and wrote many of the columns, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Lona.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be here and talk about the book and the View from the Attic columns.
Well, let's go back in time. I guess it's pretty recent history, but tell me how you got involved in the Historical Society in Fremont County.
Well, my husband's family was from Fremont County, and when we moved back here, I just had so many sister-in-laws that said, hey, you've got to get involved with the Fremont County Historical Society, which I did in the early 2000s, and that's when I met Evelyn. And she and I just were sort of kindred souls on enjoying writing and wanting the stories of Fremont County to be heard.
And you said you had so many sisters-in-law recommending that you get involved with this. I'm sure that Evelyn's reputation preceded her a little bit. What did you hear about her before you met her?
Well, I had a unique perspective in the fact that one of my sister-in-laws, Emily Bingston, and Evelyn had been lifelong friends. In fact, as Evelyn or Emily many times would test Evelyn's recipes as she did her radio homemakers. So I had heard Evelyn talked about probably for 30 years. So to meet her was just sort of anticlimactic after all these stories I'd heard all those years. And they were all good. They were all good.
So you got involved in the Historical Society, and in 2005, you and Evelyn worked together to relaunch this View from the Attic column. Can you tell me what your goal was, how that came about?
Well, the overall arching goal had been where there were stories. But as we talked, we knew that what's really important are first-person stories. people who actually lived it. And so we went out and tried to find people that could really give us, who are good writers, who could tell firsthand stories. And so, for example, Sherry Perkins from Malcolm Daisy, or Daisy Malcolm, excuse me, did quite a few columns on the 50s and what it was like to grow up in the 50s. Evelyn's age group was, of course, young, in the 30s and the 20s. We used Evelyn a lot for firsthand stories there, and we just sought out other people. So we did the we did a lot of that where they could relive their experiences and people could get it firsthand. Then we found pioneer letters that we wanted people to hear those stories. So in all cases, we were trying to get people who had actually lived here to use their actual words to tell the stories of Fremont County.
First person history. Was it hard to convince people that they had stories to share?
You know, it is interesting because Evelyn and I both love to write. So, it, you know, 550 words is what each of these columns had to be. It was easy for us. And through a lot of searching, we found others who could write and liked to write. So it is a difficult process. We probably contacted maybe as many as 30 different people. And out of that, we got several good writers.
And these columns went on for many years. Publishing this book, Selections from View of the Attic, is actually the end of the project. When I was visiting with Evelyn, she told me that she resigned from the committee and then everyone else resigned too. Can you tell me about that meeting?
Her version of resigning, I don't quite know what she means. She and I did a lot of talking, and we finally decided that there may be somebody in the future who writes View from the Attic from Fremont County. But our particular project, which lasted over 13 years, had to come to an end so we as the co-editors could say, hey, goodbye to everybody. So I think when she said resign, she sort of meant that she just sort of turned it over to a couple of us to finalize the attic. And that's what we did. And we did it in honor of her. So we did it around her 99th birthday.
Yeah. And
so it was sort of our birthday present for the 99th birthday. We're not sure what we'll give her for our 100th birthday.
A 500-page or so book is a pretty big present for a 99th birthday. So it will be hard to outdo that. But she's very proud of this collection and was very eager for me to dig into it and look at these letters or these columns. And Lona, you wrote many of these. Now, you didn't grow up in Fremont County, but you didn't grow up too far away, right?
No. And another project that Evelyn and I worked on was a pictorial history, which we really did, I think, about 2008. And I teased her that after I got done editing that book, that I knew about 10% of what she knew about Fremont. But it just intrigued me because we are a very special county because most people believe that Iowa started as they crossed from what is now Illinois over into eastern Iowa. What we found out is that basically the Missouri River on this side of the state was the interstate of the 1800s. So we just had such a fascinating history, and being somebody that loves history, I really got into, hey, people in Fremont County need to be proud of our history, and one way we can do it is with this attic book. And I want to add with this attic book, what also made it neat, is one of our strongest volunteers and our current president, Sandra Bingston, looked up pictures. So almost every attic now has a picture that represents what the attic was talking about. So it's really pretty neat.
Tell me more about what makes Fremont County unique, because I spent quite a bit of time reading through this book, and I knew a little bit about Fremont County to start, but I was really struck by what a unique part of the state this is.
Yeah, it's, you know, first of all, we had the Lewis and Clark, they did come through here. We have several sites in which they stopped and actually walked on Fremont County land. So that's a great interest to a great many people. John Brown, basically, who fought to liberate slaves, couldn't have done it without Tabor, Iowa, which was a major part of the Underground Railroad. We had the orphan trains that came out here from New York. We were a crossroads. We have a prehistoric Indian spot that exists because the Indians used the Platte River and the Missouri River to come down from wherever they lived for sort of a cooler, a warmer climate. One of my favorite stories is I once lived in South Dakota, and I dealt a lot with the Lakota Indians up in South Dakota. What I discovered when I moved to Fremont County is some of the relatives of that part of western South Dakota lived in Hamburg, Iowa, which is in our county, because they wed French-Canadian trappers who established Hamburg to educate their children. So we have that connection. So there's, and the Mormons went through here. So there's so many pieces of national history that crisscrossed in this county.
One of the little bits of local history that I thought was really fascinating in one of the columns that Evelyn wrote, she made it sound like Fremont County was, in a way, the Las Vegas of Iowa, because people went there to get married, because they could get married without a waiting period.
Yeah, I mean, and there's it's little things like that. We've always just sort of done our own thing down here, and it ends up being some interesting stories, and some of them definitely have a national interest.
So now you wrote a great deal also about the rodeo in Sydney and in Fremont County. Tell me a little bit about the rodeo and why it's such an important part of your history.
Well, you know, the fact that it's been here, I think it was the 95th anniversary this year. We're almost 100 years old. You go almost any place in the country and you mention Sydney Rodeo, and they know about this rodeo that goes on in my hometown of Sydney. And there just are, you know, there's so many pieces of history around the rodeo. We've had some of the most famous cowboys rodeo here. During the 60s and the 70s, we had top performers. So there's just a whole lot of stories, and there's a big interest in the rodeo. In fact, is our museum, which is, of course, connected with this set of attic articles, we now have half of the museum as the history of the Sydney Rodeo and the other half the history of the county. So, again, we have a rodeo that is still in existence, still one of the largest outdoor rodeos in the country, and has been recognized by the Rodeo Fame of Hall as being a very outstanding rodeo.
Now, you mentioned your museum, and I know that that's another part of the Fremont County Historical Society that Evelyn and many of you are incredibly proud of, opening a new museum in 2014 along with a genealogy center. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we are very proud of it. We've had people tell us that it's a little gem and that it's a Reader's Digest. We basically reached out to a museum designer in eastern Iowa, Will Thompson, and he helped us pick out the events that we used. And so one of the things that is all these national stories that I've just mentioned to you, we literally highlight in the museum as well as the rodeo part. So we do have a brand new building. It cost us a lot of money, and in a county like Fremont County, which now has 8,000 people, I often said, because I actually headed the project to build the museum, I said that many times that every one of our citizens gave the equivalent of about $50 to get this museum built, and babies all the way to the retired folks. So the community has really supported this museum being put together. And we've used a lot of modern techniques. So a lot of small museums will, you know, do a nice job printing somebody's furniture that was in the community, and that is important. But ours goes beyond that and gives you the stories of national interest. So somebody from Oregon can stop here and literally find out how how our people here eventually led to the settlement of the West, which created the state of Oregon, or vice versa. We had a A group of our soldiers in the Confederate War arrived at Shiloh the morning before the battle. So we even have people that participated in that. So we have had people that have touched the United States in lots of different ways.
The history of Fremont County is rich and it's special, but every county in Iowa has stories. And in Fremont County, you're really outstanding in how you have invested in your history and telling those stories and championed telling of those stories, gotten so many people excited and involved. To people in other counties, what's your message? Why is it important to record this kind of history?
You know, I put it this, it's very hard to be an expert when you're not 50 miles away from home. But one of the things that you have to do is you have to take a step back and do just look at what's going on. Because I agree. I believe that probably every county in this country, not just in Iowa, has some very unique stories, and they're all part of the fabric of the national history. But too often we think, oh, well, you know, that's John over there. We've known John forever, and he can't be special because we know him. And there are always special people and special stories in every county that people need to deal with. And so I just encourage all those people out there doing museums to look for the special stories and look for them under the microscope of how did this affect the nation.
Now, we talked about how this View from the Attic project went on for 13 years, and there was a whole team of people behind it. And they represent some of the older people in Fremont County. Of course, they were recording their early history. Do you feel like Fremont County's history is safe in the hands of a new generation? Are there young people who are excited about this too?
The way I look at it, and it's somewhat philosophical, is eventually we all get old. And as we get old, the history becomes important. Family connections become important. Right now, I think the young people in Fremont County are busy raising children and all of those things that you do when you're young. So my hope is that as people get into their 40s and 50s, that they have the time to step back and be interested. And I think that is the hope. Otherwise, we do lose some rich history and some rich background if we just generation those of us that are old right now to be the last one that cares. But what I find is if there's activities going on, and we do have a small museum, but we've got people that constantly work to, you know, have the museum be important in the community, that eventually we'll find those people that as they get older will say, you know, I do have an interest in history, and I do want to help preserve it.
Well, and you've given the community a museum, the county, a museum that they can visit. And I'm sure that a lot of school children have had the opportunity to go and visit the museum and probably come away feeling kind of proud about where they're from.
Yes, we do have visitors. We want that. We've also had them, our pictorial book of Fremont County is actually used in one of our schools as a curriculum. And we hope this attic book will be something also that people will use. So it is so important, and every time the children come, they do love it. And every time we get a visitor, we get so many compliments about, oh, this is so nice, and I learned so much, and we feel very good about that.
Well, Lona Lewis, thank you so much for talking with me.
Can I give you a commercial plug for just a second?
Very quickly.
Anybody that wants to buy the attic book can go on the Fremont County Historical Society website, and we do have it for sale. And we certainly encourage people to get it because it's got some great stories in it.
All right. Lona Lewis of the Fremont County Historical Society. We were talking about selections from View from the Attic, which is a collection of over 500 columns about the history of Fremont County. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.